Our next case this morning is number 06-3285, the United States against Michael E. Lupke. Mr. Kelly.
May it please the Court, my name is Chris Kelly and I represent Michael Lupke in this appeal from a criminal conviction and sentence. At sentencing, Judge Shabazz failed to give Mr. Lupke a meaningful opportunity to tell his story to the court and to plead for leniency prior to the time that the court decided upon the sentence. And that's the first error that I want to talk about during this argument. When Judge Shabazz considered the argument that was made on Mr. Lupke's behalf by his counsel, he misunderstood that argument and therefore imposed an unreasonably harsh sentence, and that's the second issue that's raised in this appeal. For both of those reasons, we think the court should vacate this sentence and remand for resentencing.
I wonder, Mr. Kelly, if you can explain why, if, as in the Barnes case, it's all right to rectify a failure to respect the right of allocution by setting the sentence aside, reopening and inviting the defendant to speak, why that isn't basically what happened here. You know, I agree with you. As you look at this transcript, Judge Shabazz uses some pretty strong language where he says, it is a judge, the defendant is committed to the custody, et cetera. And then after that, he says, before imposing any sentence, maybe he recognizes he hasn't actually imposed, even though he's adjudged, he calls on the defendant for an allocution. But it looks like Barnes is awfully close to saying that these kinds of oversights can be rectified, and that's roughly what Judge Shabazz seems to have done.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree that that's what Judge Shabazz did. Judge Shabazz did not set aside the sentence, reopen the sentencing proceedings, and consider it anew. And that's what the Barnes footnote says that a court can do to rectify the situation. And if Judge Shabazz had said, okay, forget about the 20-year sentence that I had judged, I'm going to start this proceeding over, I'm going to listen to the arguments again, I'm going to give the defendant a chance to allocute, and then decide upon a fresh sentence, I think Barnes would permit that. But that's not what happened here. In this case, Judge Shabazz announced the sentence. He did use strong language. He said the sentence is adjudged. He not only talked about the 20-year sentence, he talked about the fact that he was imposing supervised release. He announced all of the terms of supervised release. And at that point, having already told Mr. Lupke what his sentence was going to be, he said something like, the court now calls upon the defendant for those matters he would like to bring to the court's attention. Now, I'm not sure that that would be interpreted as an invitation to provide mitigating information to influence the sentence, because he certainly didn't say that's what he wanted Mr. Lupke to do. But even beyond that, I don't think that at that point he is giving Mr. Lupke any opportunity to influence the sentence at all, because he's already decided what this sentence is going to be.
So you think in context, I mean, if he had said, I mean, he says before imposing any sentence, so I guess it depends a little bit what we mean, because what I'm wondering is if he had simply said something like, you have the right to allocution, however, you know, Mr. Lupke, and so if you would like to persuade me that some other sentence is preferable, now you have the chance to do it. He never said anything like that.
Right. I think that
would have been enough?
I think that would have been a closer question,
okay.
But we're not even that close. I think what Barnes says is that the court should set aside the sentence and reopen, and that certainly didn't happen here. But even saying, I'm going to give you a chance to persuade me to give you a different sentence, would have been closer to what Rule 32 is intending to do, but Judge Shabazz didn't come close to that. Rule 32 really embodies a right that has been around in the common law for hundreds of years, and this court in Barnes explains that that right is a right to have the request for mercy factored into the sentence. There's nothing in this record that would suggest that Judge Shabazz gave Mr. Lupke a meaningful opportunity to actually influence a sentence which had already been adjudged. Now, I don't know if there's a legal distinction between adjudging a sentence and imposing a sentence. I know that it's Judge Shabazz's standard practice to give people the right to allocution and then tell them what the sentence is and then ask everybody in the court if they have anything else to say, and then he'll say, I impose that sentence. But
so he just got it out of order this time.
I think he got it out of order. I think, you know, with all due respect to Judge Shabazz, I think he just slipped up and forgot to give Mr. Lupke his right to allocution. I think he decided what the sentence was going to be. He adjudged that sentence, not only told him what the sentence was going to be, but all the terms of supervised release. And to suggest at that point that saying to Mr. Lupke that, you know, I call upon you for anything that you want to bring to the court's attention is actually a meaningful opportunity for Mr. Lupke to influence the sentence that had already been decided upon just isn't supported by this record.
But your position really has to be that this is functionally a structural error beyond any kind of harmless error review, because you really haven't suggested anything in your brief that Mr. Lupke might have said to the judge that wasn't before the judge. And Mr. Lupke does say, gee, I'm really sorry, you know, or whatever he says,
right.
Expresses his remorse. I'm just sorry for everything that's been done and the outcome of this, he says.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we don't really see anything except this structural flaw. And I wonder if you have any cases that say failure to give allocution, if we assume this really was a full failure, is the kind of thing that's just so fundamental that we have to reverse.
Yes, our reply brief actually cites a number of cases from other circuits that either presume prejudice,
mm-hmm.
Or say that this is an error per se. And the rationale for those cases is that it's impossible to measure the harm that it's done, because it's impossible for anybody to know what impact Mr. Lupke's statements would have had upon the sentencing court if the right of allocution had been honored in a meaningful way. I think that's also consistent with controlling Supreme Court precedent, because the Hill against the United States case says that the case of Van Hook against the United States established the remedy for a violation of the right to allocution when that's raised on direct appeal, and Van Hook is just a one or two sentence decision that says remand for resentencing because there was a denial of allocution. So I think that's controlling Supreme Court precedent. That precedent that tells us that the remedy is that it's remanded for resentencing. The Supreme Court in the Green decision also talks about the history of reversing or vacating sentences when allocution has been denied. And I think that's consistent with a number of cases that we cite in the brief from this circuit, Barnes, Serhant, and Clemens, which all talk about the fact that the right to allocution can't be reduced to a mere formality. It can't be honored in form only, that when there is a breach of that right, the remedy is resentencing. And I think that's what the remedy has to be here. It's unfortunate, I think, that Judge Shabazz didn't listen to Mr. Lupke, because there is an unusual relationship here between Mr. Lupke's mental illness and his drug use.
But, I think the reason Judge Shabazz wasn't persuaded by that was that this is not a man who was just using methamphetamine. He had become a fairly big-time dealer. And it's one thing to say that methamphetamine is perhaps therapeutically useful for his ADHD. But it's quite another thing to say that he has to become the biggest distributor in the Rice Lake area. So,
if Your Honor is familiar with Rice Lake, it's not much of an area.
Well,
it's more cows than people.
I'm not, I have to say, but kind of a city girl. But nonetheless, you don't have to go into distribution to any kind of degree if you happen to have a drug dependency. A lot of people don't. A lot of people are just buyers.
That's true. And I think if Mr. Lupke had the chance to talk to the court, he probably would have talked about the fact that he turned to methamphetamine because the drugs that he was getting, the prescription drugs for ADHD,
Ritalin, right?
were leaving him like a zombie, and that meth was actually allowing him to function as a normal human being, and that he turned to selling it because that was the way he could finance his drug habit. Now, I understand that the court, you know, took the position that addiction without more is not a mitigating circumstance. I think that more was here, and I think that that's a reason that this was an unreasonable sentence. But I think that the two issues tie together, because if Mr. Lupke had been given the opportunity to explain that to Judge Shabazz, the sentence may have been less harsh than the 20-year sentence that was imposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. We'll hear now from Mr. Gerards.
Thank you. May it please the Court. Peter Gerards for the United States. The standard of review here is plain error because the defendant never objected to the proceedings or the manner in which Judge Shabazz conducted the sentencing.
When was he supposed to object? And in the reply brief, your opponent says, you know, things are pretty much done by the time.
No, Your Honor, there's a couple of places. Most specifically, in the record R30, which is the sentencing transcripts on page 15 and 16, and the appellate record in his appellate section, App 116 to 117, the court then at that point said, is there anything else that the parties wish to bring up?
Right, and
at
anything that point, further by either Mr. Mallory, nothing, Your Honor.
And then he could have said at that point, Judge, you know, I think you've got a mistake here. I think that Mr. Lipke didn't get a chance to have his right of allocution. But, of course, he wouldn't have said that. Why is that? Because Mr. Lipke got his right of allocution. It was just simply the order. The reality is the Barnes decision and the decision cited by the appellee in this case indicate that it is not a per se reversal. It's an important right. It's a critical right. There's no doubt about it. But when there's a gotcha sort of situation here in which the defendants have now been able to come back and go, oh, Judge Shabazz, you didn't use the exact language, you didn't do it exactly correctly, nobody's saying that it was an ideal situation or that Judge Shabazz complied strictly. But the question is it a complete failure? Is it plain error here?
But it's pretty, I mean, I've been looking at this transcript ever since I got these briefs, and when Judge Shabazz starts talking about imposing the sentence, it's such definitive language. It begins on page 13 at the bottom, at line 18 of this transcript, and then just says those matters which he would like to bring to the court's attention. He's not really inviting Mr. Lipke to change the sentence.
In difference to the court, though, he said before imposing sentence, that is the precatory phrase there that the court didn't point out. And that's critical because he's announcing to everybody there, before I impose the sentence, and he personally and directly addresses the defendant required by Rule 32, the defendant indicates nothing to say that he doesn't understand it. There's nothing in the record to say that he was stunned or somehow didn't know how to articulate himself. There's nothing in the record that says he would have done something different, or there's nothing in the record to think that he was limited in any fashion.
Well, he hardly says, and I mean, nothing is the operative word here. That's his first word. He says 14 words after.
But, Your Honor, now we're just going to reach the level of speculation about what was in this defendant's mind. He did what was quite logical, to tell you the truth. What he did was, he did not need to bring up the stuff about the ADHD or anything else. That was all briefed beforehand. That was all argued by his counsel. Logically, he said, I have nothing more to say. It is before the court. And more important, I'm sorry for what went on. He expresses remorse. Are we supposed to stand here now and speculate and say, gosh, maybe he should have made this argument, maybe he should have made this argument or that argument or anything? There's nothing to indicate that he was inhibited in any way.
The question is, would he have felt free to have expanded on anything if before he heard 240 months and all these tiny details of supervised release, if he had really felt that he had some serious input into the sentence? We don't know that, of course.
But there's nothing to indicate that he didn't. Now, even in the Gordon case, the Fifth Circuit case that we talk about in my brief, in which the court said, hey, you know what? The court already pronounced sentence. And right at the end, it just said, oh, do you want to say anything about the sentencing here? And the guy says, no, based on what the court's decided, I have nothing to say, Your Honor. Now, in that decision, the Fifth Circuit said, look it, he was given the opportunity. He didn't use it appropriately, and that's fine. The court found that satisfied the Rule 32 requirements of allowing the defendant the opportunity to articulate it. We are simply speculating, and the defendant's asking us to speculate about what the court would have or what Mr. Lipke would have said or could have said. Again, there's nothing to indicate that he didn't say, well, can I say something now? Can I do something now? Instead, he just gave a articulation of an allocution that's given very often in the courts in the district court. And it's simply his decision to do it that way. There's just simply nothing to indicate that he was somehow intimidated, limited, or somehow should have and would have done something different. The evidence that the court had was before it. Contrary to what Mr. Kelly's saying, the court did take the ADHD into account. The way the court did that is they said Mr. Lipke voluntarily stopped taking it and became the biggest drug dealer in Rice Lake. The court then said, you know what? Based on the amount of drugs, based on his conduct, he should have gotten the top of the sentence. But balancing his ADHD with his lack of prior criminal record, I'm not giving him the top of the guideline. I'm going to give him something in the middle. And that's what the court did. To say that that wasn't taken into account is absolutely wrong. Judge Shabazz took the ADHD into account, took his character, the criminal history, the conduct involved in this case, including the threatening to the witnesses, the amount of drugs involved, the damage to the vehicle while he's being transported, took all that into account and said, you know what, I'm going to give you the middle because of that ADHD and your lack of prior criminal history. I think it shows a very consult and well-reasoned sentence. There is no error in this case. There's certainly no plain error. The defendant had the opportunity to have Judge Shabazz consider all of the evidence that he wishes him to consider, and he did consider. And it shows in the sentence that everything was done. The government would request that the court affirm the judgment and conviction order. Unless the court has any other questions, I'm finished.
I don't think so. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Mr. Kelly, you have a minute left.
I want to address the plain error argument that Mr. Giroux made. I think it's not at all clear that counsel had any warning that that Judge Shabazz was not going to give Mr. Lupke an opportunity to allocute. My reading of the transcript was that Judge Shabazz was trying to decide, first of all, what the guidelines were, that he made his decision about what the guidelines were that applied here. It seemed to me at that point that he was inviting counsel to address the concept of a variance from the guidelines.
And yeah, he uses that variance language, does he not?
He does.
Is there any... You're not complaining that he failed to recognize that he had discretion to go outside the guidelines?
No, I'm sure Judge Shabazz recognized that he had discretion, and I think that's what he meant by a variance, is should I give a within-guideline sentence or an outside of the guideline
sentence.
So
he wasn't speaking of it in the old sense of the term.
I don't believe so, okay. No. And it seems to me that counsel at that point would have anticipated that Judge Shabazz was then going to give the right of allocution to Mr. Lupke and didn't have an opportunity to object when he didn't do so. In any event, as our brief points out, there are a number of cases that say that this is plain error because it is an obvious error that affects substantial rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Indeed, our thanks to both attorneys. The case will be taken under advisement.